And then number two, I delivered it. And that's the whole secret of any marketing success. A lot of people want to make this more complicated, and they want to present themselves as geniuses and, you know, emphasize how hard all this is, and you've got to be this and that. No, what you really have to do is have your eyes open, get to know one market intimately, and you will see what that market's crying for. In fact, I want to leave you with this thought. It's not so much about learning marketing as it is about learning a market and then serving that market. That's where the money comes from. Nobody makes money from sitting around knowing 101,000 internet marketing tricks. People make money from knowing one market really well and offering the people in that market things and learning day by day, week by week, how to make better offers and sell more and increase their margins. That's really how this business works. So I hope that was a helpful answer. I'm very long-winded, as you've probably noticed. In the seminar, I try to stay in the background because if I ever start talking, it never stops. That's why I like to have these calls.
Can I add something to that, Ken?
Sandy, please do. Please.
Okay.
Do.
You know, Lynn, you said there's 10,000 sites out there.
Yeah.
You certainly don't have to go look at all 10,000 sites.
Right.
But when you're on Overture and you use the bid price tool, it will give you a list of people who are paying for particular keywords and what their websites are.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go visit 20, 30, however many of those sites you feel like you need to visit. And then you can go over to Google and plug in your keywords that you think are the best keywords. And again, you'll get a list of sites that are advertising under those keywords or coming up under those keywords and pick, you know, the top 10, 15, 20 to go visit again. And what you want to be looking for is not just so much what's out there and what are their headlines and how are they marketing, but also on these sites that I'm visiting, are they asking people for their email address? So are they actually collecting a list? And is there something that I've put together that might complement what they offer? Because these folks could be potential JV partners for you or potential affiliates for the product that you ultimately create.
Right. Thank you very much for that.
I have a couple of thoughts. This is Howie. One is it's possible if you're looking at a keyword that's getting 5,000 a month, the probability is that that market's being ignored by everyone else or all the heavy hitters, which means that you can expect your conversions to be slightly higher. It's really possible with a market that small to make, you know, with a $30 product to make $100 a month, $150 a month, which, you know, if you go through Ken's theory of what do you have, how much money would it take you to buy that, you know, you'd need a $30,000 investment at 6%
right.
to give you $1,800 a year. So if the market is small and you can get to know it and you can sell them something nice for $30, and the other nice thing about a lot of the technologies that have come around is that they increase intimacy. So the audio generator or even this teleseminar call allows you to get fairly intimate with your market without doing tremendous amounts of one-on-one. So you can really, if it's a market that's willing to spend money on a problem or an opportunity or a passion, small markets can be really nice places to play.
I think you made a really good point there. You know, and even if let's say the worst thing that happens is the market's smaller than you hoped, and you're only making $100 a month. Well, obviously, you know, that's nothing from a financial point of view. That's nothing to write home about. However, if you're a beginner, you've now built your first money-making site, and I guarantee, and we could talk to 10,000 people that have done it. Once you make that first one, the second one is way easier, and you almost invariably make a lot more money on the second and third and fourth ones because you've learned. Great.
This is Brian Scott in Austin.
Hey, Brian.
I was in the February seminar that just passed.
Okay, great.
I've gone through kind of what Howie describes. I've gone and identified probably 10 good target markets, and I've selected three I want to go test. So now my challenge is getting the website up, figuring out who's going to host it, all the things you listed as the top five things. You know, you would do opt-ins, autoresponders. And in doing some research, there's, you know, these turnkey offerings out there like Make My Site and, you know, push button publishing and those types of sites. And I just wanted to know if that was a good avenue to go for a beginner, or do you guys suggest kind of piecemealing it with better solutions?
Great question. Cindy, what do you think on, since you're our internet mechanics expert?
Yeah, you know, I haven't ever used a turnkey service, and so I just did a little bit of research on them after we got that question on the Ask database. But without using them, it's really hard to say whether they actually provide and do exactly what they say they're going to do and whether it's better to go that way than to go out and kind of put the pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what's most important, if you decide to do that, you need to ask a lot of questions, and I would go to several different ones asking them all those same questions. And they would be questions like, what's your turnaround time and how many pages am I able to put on my site and what happens if I want to make a change? Do I get charged for making that change or do you just make it for me and how long does it take to do that? What if I want to test various headlines once I get the site set up? Are you doing that as well? What am I being charged for the merchant account or the ordering source that you're giving me? And there's a whole list of questions I would ask them. But for us, what we did is we found a hosting service that we're very, very comfortable with, and we found a webmaster that we're very comfortable with. And between those two, anything that I need to do, I can do simply by calling basically the webmaster and saying, okay, here's what I need, and I know it gets done.
So the hosting service that you have charges you a monthly fee, I would guess?
That's correct.
The webmaster you pay on an hourly basis on demand?
She's got a couple of different programs that she has. She'll have a base fee for a website, depending on how much you want to put in the website, and then you can do an annual fee so you can go back to her as much as you need to. I think what we could pay, $75 a month is what it works out to, and we can go and get as much done as we need during the month on our sites.
Okay.
Could you give us her name?
Oh, her name is Wendy Wood.
She's awesome.
Okay, so somebody else knows her.
And then how Wendy's going to get a flood of business.
I know. Look out, Wendy.
Yeah. I almost shudder. How do people get in touch with Wendy?
Let me see. It's design firm, DESIGN, firm, FIRM, at cox.net.
KOX? I mean COX?
COX, yes.
That's a big help to have a relationship with a credible, reliable web designer, and they'll hook you up. A good web designer will hook you up with the hosting company because he or she will already have one, and you don't have to worry about that. Now the other part of that question is there is one turnkey system which I do recommend, and it's the One Shopping Cart. Now that doesn't host yet; they're working on that for the future. But that provides all the sort of the background engineering, the autoresponder sequence, the order taking. They'll help you set up a relationship with a credit card company. We have a variation or a version of their service called System Sales Machine, systemsalesmachine.com. And you can test this would be for somebody that's already got a web page in mind and they just – are confused about, okay, how do I get all the order responders and all the order taking and all that, you know, to work together? That's what that service is for.
Right, because I've got like like Frank Kern described the Flycatcher page.
Yeah.
I've got that pretty much written.
Okay.
And now I just need, you know, a place to put it. So that's kind of where I'm at. I just need to execute the technical side now.
Well, between and Howie and Cindy, feel free to chime in, but one tried and true method is find a reliable web page maker for you, you know, who will make pages for you,
mm-hmm.
and they'll hook you up with a host. And then what you do is you connect that page to the shopping cart system, systemsalesmachine.com, and there's a little learning curve there, but that handles the order taking and, you know, sending the money to the bank and putting up, you know, order responders. I mean, you can do things like when somebody orders, you automatically send them a sequence of emails saying, you know, thank you for ordering, and then a couple of days later saying, hey, did you have any questions?
Right.
And you can, I think you can test that service, the back end service, for $3.95 for 1 month to see if you like it. And it's good. They've been doing it, gosh, 4 or 5 years, and the first couple of years were rocky, but they've actually made it into quite a good service. We're going to start using it ourselves for some of our own projects.
Yeah, I have one thing to add about the turnkey solutions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're obviously paying kind of a beginner's tax,
mm-hmm.
so that you're going to have to learn how to manage this stuff at some point anyway, if you're serious. You're either going to have to manage human beings who are going to answer to you, or you're going to have to figure out how to use, you know, FrontPage or Dreamweaver or some authoring program to do it yourself. The main question I would ask of people, not of the companies that are selling this, the solutions, but of people who are using them, is what's the cost of switching? I know that every day I'm going to make mistakes. What I try to do is figure out what's the cheapest mistake I can make here. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's certain solutions where once you're hooked in, well, now they've got your domain name, and you can't get it back from them.
Oh God! Thank you for bringing that up. Always register your own domain names in your own name. God, that's an old mistake. I haven't even thought of that, for years. But yeah, that's sort of a basic. Don't let anybody register it. You know, do it for you, because then they could end up owning the name, and therefore all your traffic,
or your list. Make sure that you have complete control over the list.
And you don't have to worry about System Sales Machine doing that, but in other cases you might.
Right. Well, I don't think of the one shopping cart System Sales Machine solutions as, they're not the turnkey. They're the back end. But in terms of setting up the website itself, you know, that's what people, I think a lot of people find very hard, is just putting up a web page.
And the funny thing is, if you've got the right person, it's not hard at all. You just say, hey, here's the letter, put it on the web. Boom. Done. You know, there's just nothing more to it. And then you look at what they've done, and you might say, oh, I really should have underlined some things, and I'd like that headline to be bigger. And then you just tell them, and they do it.
Can I have a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is Wayne with the Bob Biz Magazine.
Hey, Wayne.
Hi. I got in late. I apologize. I checked out the URL you gave on the system seminar /smart-beginners, and I'm not finding it. Can you repeat that and also Cindy's URL?
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Let's go back and see what I got here.
The system seminar has no hyphens in there.
Right. Just
that's one word.
Spell out the systemseminar.com/smart-beginners.
Beginners or beginner?
Beginners, I think. Let me check.
It's beginners.
This is all new to me. Okay, yeah. thesystemseminar.com/smart-beginners.
Great.
And on that page, you've got Howie's course, Cindy's course, and then a deal if you want to get both of them.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And
I want to repeat, in case anybody didn't hear, a reliable fellow, Tom Costner, is working on a thing that integrates both the one shopping cart back end to hosting and web page creation. And he's looking for five guinea pigs. And actually, I shouldn't say that, because you'll actually have a very good experience, because you'll get more attention than anybody. And he's also offering the first five at a special price, because he wants to just learn what it is you actually need so he can make the service, you know, really responsive. So write me if you're ready. If you've got a way, like for the gentleman who mentioned that he's ready to go, you should look at Tom's deal. I think it's you might find it to be a pretty good one. So write me at Ken, KENMC, at amacord.com, AMACORD.com. If you're hearing this on a recording, do not write me about that, because it'll be long gone. But anyone on the call live, definitely write me, and I'll hook you up with Tom, and you can see what he's got. Great. Any other questions?
Ken, before you move off of
please.
Shopping cart.
Yeah, please go. Yeah.
That we use one shopping cart, and it's wonderful.
Okay.
And it does everything that you're talking about. Autoresponders, we can do emails, we can do broadcasts, we can do split testing on our web page. I mean, just all kinds of things. And it processes all of our payments. Works our affiliate program, on and on and on. But I would suggest to anybody that doesn't already have those services, especially if you're still looking for an autoresponder, because you can try it out, go to the site that Ken's recommending, and for $395, there you have all these tools right in front of you that you can practice with.
That's and we're saying $3.95, by the way, not $395.
Right, sorry.
No, it's important, just a little distinction, and that gives you a month to play with it. And that System Sales Machine, which is the one shopping cart system under the system label.
Oh, this is Steve Hamby again.
Hey Steve.
Hey, when will this tape be available for distribution? I can't wait to listen to it again.
me neither. I can't wait either. if all is going well, this is being recorded correctly, and then we should get a digital version of it, let's see, today's Wednesday, by Friday. And what I'm going to do is post this in an MP3 format, which means you can download it on the web instantly. And I want to encourage everybody, one of those basic things to get under your belt is being able to deal with the MP3 audio format. Most new computers already have an MP3 player on them. And once you can deal in MP3, that means there's all kinds of material that's available to you, that you can audio material that you can just go click on a link and download and listen to it on your computer at home. I am also going to put this on an audio cassette too, because I'm going to send the graduates of the February course a whole bunch of follow-up audio cassettes, and this will be one of them. That won't happen until probably April, but I'm going to get the digital version of this online hopefully by next week. And that's assuming it got recorded, and I think it did. I don't have any reason to think it didn't, but we never know until we hear the recording.
The other thing I want to mention is that this is kind of a predictable response, but it would be very much in favor, obviously, being a beginner, if you did look to increasing the frequency from once a month to twice a month or whatever. You know, this is perfectly great here, but that would definitely be in favor of that as well, of our meetings.
Okay. You mean of these kinds
yeah.
of beginner's calls?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
You said you were thinking about that, so I want to put my two bits in that on the positive side for that.
Okay. Thank you. And you know, what we could do, too, is I think since so much great fundamental material was covered in this call, what we could do is make this call, you know, like available for download. And then in future calls, it would be more focused on people's questions. I know I at least tended to go off on all these different tangents. But if people listen to this call first, they won't need to ask some of these questions, and then we can get more into people's specific beginners getting started questions. But thanks for that vote of interest. It makes a big difference, by the way. You know, anybody, if you ever see us doing anything and you want us to do it again or do more of it, let us know, because there's all kinds of things we're doing and we don't necessarily know what people want. So thank you for letting us know. Any other questions?
Yes, this is Shirley from Colorado.
Hey, Shirley.
Hi. I have a question. I've had several come up, but the one that's really burning, you addressed here a little bit ago. You were talking about registering the domain improperly on a beginner's.
Well, don't let some sleazy web designer say, "Oh, I'll handle that for you, Shirley."
Well, I've got that problem right now, and
uh-huh.
I can't get them to respond to email, voicemail, faxes, nothing
yeah.
to change it into my name. Mm-hmm. They don't even have the billing in my name.
I'm going to be the bearer of bad news, which I don't want to do. You don't own that domain name. He does. As far as the domain name registration company is concerned, if his name's on the record, he's the owner. That's why it's so important to learn how to register your own domain. It's not hard, just to learn how to do it yourself.
So there's no way I made that mistake as a beginner that I can get that corrected?
You'll have to ask the registration company if they have any mechanism for, you know, evaluating a problem like that and addressing it.
Okay.
Somebody might have an idea.
Yeah, this is Wayne Clayton again with About Biz.
Hey, Wayne.
I had a client that happened to them, and pretty much the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
And what we wound up doing was contacting the registrar and faxing to them a letter stating what the issue was, how this person was the correct owner of the domain, and I believe what they did was they responded back to the other person, who also never took the time to respond to the registrar, and things wound up being switched to this client's name.
Great point.
Worth the try.
If they're as unresponsive, you know, a lot of these guys just set up shop and then lose interest or disappear or whatever. They'll let the thing lapse, right?
Right.
What's the equity behind the domain name? Is it high in search engines, or are there a lot of links pointing to it?
What's the value there, Shirley?
I want to get out from under this man's, and I'm not the only one. I've emailed, corresponded with some other people who are just as disgusted with this gentleman.
Yeah, well.
He was wonderful in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't, from what I understand, it's registered with Network Solutions that I cannot transfer anything to someone else unless my name is on there.
Right. I mean, basically, just so everybody knows, since this is a beginner's course, let me explain how this works. There are three general fields that are filled out when you register a domain name. One is who's the owner. Number two is who's the administrative contact. And number three, the person that they actually send, hey, we need some more money from you, whatever. And then three, who's the technical contact for this name? So that's why either work with somebody you absolutely trust, and then there's no problem, or register it yourself and make sure you're listed as the owner, period. But here's the problem. If you do register, or if this is registered, and you're not listed as the owner, you're not the owner. I mean, maybe morally, ethically, you're the owner, but this kind of thing happens, and it happens a lot, and it's been going on since the beginning of domain names, and hopefully other people will be spared this in the future. But now that you know, Howie made it asked you an important question is, okay, your feelings about this situation aside, what's the value in this particular domain name? Have you invested a lot in driving traffic to it? Have you built a lot of brand equity for it?
Yes.
You have?
Yes.
Wow. Do you know when it expires?
September 2004.
Okay. Now, did somebody mention the service that lets you be next in line when a domain name expires? Did anyone mention that?
Oh, the Grabit. I did that once. It's not Grabit.
I believe GoDaddy also has a feature for that, too.
Okay. I mean, that's a minimum. You want to make sure that you're...
$19.95.
Yeah. I mean, make sure that you're listed as the next in line for it. And if he's as flaky as he appears, he may just forget, because he's going to have to come up with the money to register that, and if he's scanned a whole bunch of people, he's going to have to come up with a whole bunch of money, so hopefully he's gone on to the next thing. And when September rolls around and it expires, you can get it. But meanwhile, you're stuck, so I would not do anything more than that because there's not much more you can do and just, work on the
Thank
next
you.
Thing. Yeah, sorry Thank that you. Happened to you. That's why I started teaching again. I kept hearing all these stories even 10 years later. They just keep happening, and hopefully we can prevent some of that. Okay, anybody else with a question?
Dan?
Yeah.
I have a question. I don't know if this is a little advanced, but I set up an ask campaign, drove the AdWords traffic for this niche, and I'm getting kind of an anemic response to the ask campaign. I'd say I'm getting probably like a 5% response, and I remember at the seminar, Frank had mentioned ideally you're getting about a 10% response. Do you have any...
Well, are you using a sort of a formulaic copy that Frank suggested?
Well, first of all, I was just asking questions and was getting hardly any response. And then I started offering a free copy of the ebook once I get it created.
Okay.
And that increased the response.
Okay. So they respond to incentives, so they're not totally dead. Hey, Howie, this is sort of your area. What would you say about that level of percentage of response?
Yeah, I found that it differs. I get a lower percentage of response for the pain ebooks than I do for the passion ebooks.
Right.
Just because the person who's in pain now doesn't want to wait 3 weeks or whenever they think they're going to get their ebook. So
right.
The question is, what's the instant gratification? If there's something that you can give instant gratification with, if you have a bunch of links you can send them, or some audio, an interview that they can listen to streaming in exchange for giving information now. You know, obviously, you're collecting a group of people and sending them to this site and making them an offer that not enough of them are finding appealing.
Right,
so
exactly.
It could be.
Like almost 4% click-through rate on my AdWords.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, they're definitely interested, but
can you tell me the type of information product or niche?
Yeah, it's a fitness product.
Okay.
Information for, general fitness.
Okay, so I would try writing a sales letter, a little sales letter about the book using the questions you've gotten already. So maybe put a couple of bullets. In the book that I'm going to send you, you're going to learn things like X, Y, and
right.
Z. Please add additional questions to help me finish it.
Well, and I think that's a great response, I guess the one thing I was kind of talking about, the same thing that you brought up, I don't want to be too aggressive on, you know, I don't want to give myself unrealistic expectations by, you know, doing a heavy sales job to get them to give me the question and then, you know, create the product and find out that the market isn't as responsive to the paid, to the product that costs versus the free product.
Well, what is your Google ad offering? Is it offering the free book?
No.
Okay.
I'm not offering a free book on the ad.
Okay, I would do that because that will give you a more – because 4% is a pretty responsive group of people. But if you're making an offer that's different from the offer you're going to make when you're selling, you're getting bulk numbers.
Okay.
So say, you know, on my eczema, I think it's you know, stop eczema itching, you know, download ebook, instant download. So that's the same ad that's going to run when I switch from, you know, the ask campaign to the product. So I think the problem is you have an inflated amount of interest because you're making a different offer in the Google ad than you're presenting. So there's a hiccup.
Gotcha.
So.
Yeah, and you're saying that from Google's showing you that 4% of the people are clicking on your ad?
Yeah, 3.9%, but yeah.
And then what percentage of those people are actually giving you a question?
About 5%.
Okay. So you're losing about 95% of the people that are coming to your question. They're not.
Right, which I'd be fine with if they were all buying product. But I'm not even, mm-hmm. you know, selling a product right now. I'm just trying
right.
to.
Right. Right. You. Well, like Howie's saying, I think you might want to tinker with that, the Google ad, to see if you can get a more realistic idea of people who really want what you have to offer ultimately. But changing your Google ad may drive more people to your ask database question.
Well, it may cut it down by, you know, to 1%, but you'll be getting better people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess that's the question is, like, do you turn the faucet off, I guess, to try to drive more targeted traffic to it, or do you, I don't know. Okay.
Can I give you an example? We did a survey for a pregnancy book, and what I was concerned about, and maybe, Howie, my focus was a little different, but I knew how many people were coming to our survey page, and then I wanted to know how many of those people who actually came were interested enough to fill out the survey for us. And so we played around with the words for a while until we had as high as 33% of the people clicking to our survey actually completing our survey.
Wow. And you found, I guess then the question is, and you found that once you created the product, that those same
conversions
were happening?
And unfortunately, we're to the point where we've got the survey done. We haven't done the next step. But the information they were giving us, and this was like a 10-question survey, so it was more than just ask. It actually took them to a page where they had to walk through a survey, and they were taking the time to fill it out. And our next step, yes, will be to find out, all right, now when we go back with the real book to sell, mm-hmm. are they actually going to buy it?
Let's contrast this with how most books get created, okay? Somebody decides they should write a book on a subject, and they lock themselves away for a year or years and sweat and toil and create this 200, 300, 400-page book, and it's consumed their life for several years, and now they start thinking about how to get it published. And maybe it's publishable, maybe it's not. Maybe a publishing company will be interested in it, maybe it won't. Odds are overwhelming that a publishing company won't be interested in it. So a lot of these books in the real world, in the so-called real world, end up going nowhere. Or worse, even worse, sometimes a fledgling author will bankroll the production of his book and end up with a garage full of them and discover, and this can happen to some really smart people too, by the way, they end up with a garage full of books that they can't sell. This is publishing for the average person, even the average intelligent person. So, we're talking about a lot of procedures and a lot of things you have to do and a lot of things you have to learn. But once you start doing this stuff, it is so exponentially superior to how the rest of the world publishes information and sells information, that it's laughable. And again, you know, maybe your first one won't be a big hit, but once you set it up, it's just be a little money machine. It just keeps cranking stuff out for you forever. And by doing this surveying, you know, you have a good guess in advance of whether it's even worth the idea of even creating the product in the first place, which is, I'm amazed by it. I mean, having been doing various forms of info marketing for, it's over 20 years now. I guess this is 21 now. That's pretty amazing because this didn't exist until recently. Any other questions?
Steve Hamby again.
Hey, Steve.
At the seminar in February, I went ahead and got Frank Kern's package, you know,
yep.
He was selling down here.
Yep.
And I've gone through a good bit of it, and it's been very helpful. And I went ahead and went to one of his offerings and got the one on, I think, Labrador Retrievers or
okay.
Labrador. I don't have a dog, but I just wanted to kind of see what the procedure was like. And it was just kind of like he said, you know, a very simple sales letter. I went ahead and did it, and this was like a week or two ago, and I got the product, but I haven't gotten any back-end offers or anything, just like he said.
Yeah, yeah.
And he has been doing it for a while. And Howie's website, I went, and it was somewhat more sophisticated and so forth. Here he is talking and so forth. Is that because, is the difference there because of the fact that Cindy and Howie are more or less in a more sophisticated market, you know, dealing with marketers and internet marketing and that kind of thing, and they need a little bit more of a sophisticated website compared to just a straight, here it is, buy it or not type of buy it, sale?
Absolutely, and that's why I found Frank's material so interesting, because certain markets are more demanding. They're getting offered stuff all the time. It's like an arms race, you know. It's like, you know, one country builds a missile, the next one needs to build a missile, you know. And it's the same thing with marketing. Whatever market you're in, if you're in a very active market, whether it's internet marketing or diets, for example, is another area that's hugely competitive, you have the most sophisticated people in the world doing the marketing for that, because it's a big market with a lot of players in it, and you got to be sophisticated to succeed. Now, what does Frank do? Frank says, "The heck with that." But one of my favorite sayings from Frank is that in an air battle, he wants to shoot the plane when it's still on the runway. You know, he doesn't want to get up there and do that whole thing. He wants to make it easy. So he's finding markets, and Howie actually alluded to this earlier when he was talking about the virtue of small markets. There are a lot of small markets that are now reachable economically because of the internet that are too small for competitors to even think about, and that means that your prospect base is not being hit on every day with all kinds of offers. So you don't need to do a whole lot. This is a really key concept. I'm glad you raised it so we can focus on it. For example, let's use the case of Mike Long, who's a system grad, who also happens to be an expert at a kind of card game called Magic, which I don't understand anything about, but it's big, it's huge. Millions of people play it, apparently. In his market, there's no marketing of how-to stuff. It just doesn't exist. So anything Mike does in that market is already like a spaceship coming from outer space, you know, landing in downtown, you know, on Main Street. It's like people have never seen such a thing in their life, and so the response rate is really high, and you'll find that across the board, which is why hunting for these simple markets can be very worthwhile. Now, one thing you should know about Frank is he is an extremely sophisticated marketer in his own right. I think he's just tired of having to go through all this, so he's focusing instead on markets. Something I said earlier, he's focusing on markets instead of marketing. However, you should know that his plan is, once he's got a number of these running on a basic level, he's then going to go back and fill in the blanks. He's going to add an autoresponder sequence. He's going to add an upsell. He will do all this stuff eventually, but he's putting his focus on priming the pump, you know, just getting the water flowing. And the reason I highlighted Frank and had him get involved with us, and I'm so glad he did, is he's such a great model for beginners. because I think sometimes we overwhelm beginners. We teach them the most sophisticated stuff on earth, and they're just wanting to get a glass of water, you know, and get started. And Frank's approach is that glass of water approach. It's, you know, go to faucet, turn on faucet, stick glass under faucet, fill glass, drink, you know. And you don't need to build a whole water desalination plant and you know, that's functioning on solar energy, and, you know, you don't need all that stuff to get started. So that's a very insightful question that you asked, and I hope everybody got the benefit of that one, because it's key. If you're a beginner, or even if you're not a beginner, there's nothing like finding a little market that's too obscure for anybody else to care about. Because then you don't have to be the world's greatest marketer to serve them, for all the reasons that I gave. Great question. Hope that answered.
Yeah, sure did.
Hey, anybody else got a question?
May I have one follow-up to that one?
Yeah, please.
I was thinking, and again, I got his product. I've been looking at it and doing things with it. And I was thinking, this is something I didn't really hear highlighted at the seminar when he did his spiel up there. Mm-hmm. It seems like one of the great advantages to that whole thing of having a bunch of little ones, the underachiever model, is that even though any one of those can become saturated, and whenever you're out in the real world of business, you know, eventually something happens that nobody's interested in that or whatever. It seems like, though, since there are, as he said, millions of niches, you might say,
mm-hmm.
just do what you need to do to find out their viability, that the saturation that would be existing for the achiever, underachiever model in general is pretty far out there. It's not like
mm-hmm.
this is going to go away the next few years. Once
mm-hmm.
we get ensconced in this, it's like you can just keep in that, mining that general way of going about it for quite a while. Is that kind of how you would see that?
Absolutely, absolutely. And this goes way back, there's a couple of things I want to say about that, but this goes way back to Yannick Silver and his very first product, and why that was so successful, and the lesson in that. It's a huge lesson, and I don't know that we can talk about it too much. When Yannick first started with me and brought that idea of instant sales letters, I fell out of my chair because I knew it was going to be a hit. And the reason I knew it was going to be a hit is that if you go to any bookstore, anywhere, you'll always see a book in the business section on how to write sales letters. And if you go to your library, you'll see books from the 60s and the 40s, and if your library is old enough, the 20s. And in other words, there's been a constant, unrelenting, never-ending demand from human beings for help on improving their letters. It's not going to stop tomorrow. It's not going to stop next week. I'm sure in the year 3000, when everybody's, you know, flying around in space, there's going to be a digital, you know, encyclopedia available by some means on how to write letters. So that's the neat thing about solving people's information desires. If you are halfway good at picking products, they don't rise and fall too much. Like, people are going to be interested in dogs, my guess is, 1,000 years from now. Now, that's the first half of this. Now, the second half is the brilliance of having a widely distributed income base. So if for some reason Labradors suddenly become a hated species and nobody ever wants to look at a Labrador again, well, it doesn't matter to Frank because he's got 50, 100 other sites. I want to point out we have an unusual grad, and you'll see why he's unusual in a minute, who started with us in November. And this guy is a very solid, focused business person. He's created a system where he's cranking out 2 new sites every week. Okay, so you guys that are trying to get your first one going, think about a guy that's doing 2 a week, and he's doing it with he's set up a system where he's got people doing the work for him. But, you know, think of where he's going to be at the end of the year, and think of how stable his income will be. You know, like, you shoot one leg out, but he's got, you know, 100 other legs standing. So yeah, that's one of the beauties and the brilliances of what Frank put forward in the class. And if you think about it, that's really how the traditional publishers work. They don't put it all behind one book. Every season they put out 20, 30 books, and some work, some don't. The ones that work, they keep in their evergreen, you know, department, and they just keep reissuing them. The ones that don't, they throw away. They get occasional hits that make them a whole lot of money, kind of windfalls, but the basic bread and butter is those, just the variety of things they make available. I'm working on having a guest expert, which will be available to all info marketing grads, with a man named Melvin Powers. And Melvin Powers is one of the great mail order book sellers of all time, and he's also gotten a lot of people involved in the mail order book business. And his thing is what he used to call special interest publishing, which what we call niche publishing. And he publishes things on horses. He's got a whole line of books on horses and a whole line of book on, card games. In other words, finding perennially interesting things that people just are interested in, year out, day in, day out. One other thing I love to talk about is, you know, I think to a lot of people it's apparent that the U.S. economy, the world economy, is not as solid as it should be, and there's going to be some, I think there's going to be some major bumps along the road. I don't really believe what's in the newspapers. But I've done a lot of research, and even in the depths of the U.S. Depression in the 30s, way back when things were really tough, interestingly enough, there was always a strong, steady demand for low-priced ways to occupy one's time and hobbies and things like that. That business actually even did a little bit better in hard times. In fact, if you look at when the movie industry and the broadcasting industry really took off, it was in the 30s. So this business is not only solid for all the reasons that we've been talking about, it also historically tends to weather big changes in the economy, because people, you know, they still have their loves, they still have their hobbies, they still have the things they want to do, and they'll have a lot more time to do them if the economy really slows down. Anyway, hope that answered your question.
Yeah, definitely.
Anybody else with a question for us as we head up to 2 o'clock? If not, Howie, you're the keeper of the ask questions.
Yep.
Are there questions that we haven't covered? Should we go through that list? And I did look at that list with you, and I thought some of them were not beginner's questions, so maybe we'll not handle some of the complicated ones. But should we go through those now?
Sure. Well, someone wanted to know about using Elance.
Oh, great.
Tips and tricks to finding somebody reliable.
Great. Well, you know, one thing right off the top is when you go to Elance, you can look at the reviews that the vendors have gotten. And that's a real quick clue right away. I mean, if you have 10 people saying this guy's awful, that's a good clue that they're no good. And conversely, if you have, you know, 10 people saying this is the greatest vendor I've ever had, that's a good clue too. Also, another little trick is if you search the vendor reviews, you'll recognize some certain famous names of certain famous internet marketers who did not cloak their identity. And if you search, and I'm not going to tell you who or how, but if you search a lot, you'll discover who's, just by reading the reviews. You don't even have to be a detective. You'll discover who the top internet marketers are using for various things, and that's a good clue that they're good vendors. And yeah, go ahead, Cindy.
Yeah, I made a little list.
Oh, great, Cindy. Sure.
I thought basically you need to know what you want and make it clear when you put out your little blurb what it is you're looking for, and ask people for a sample so you know right off the bat what kind of work they can do for you. Don't necessarily take the cheapest, because that's not always the best. If you're able to, especially the first time out, you might want to try hiring two and have them both do the same product for you and see which one's the best. And then if you find someone who's good, keep them and keep going back to them. Treat them well.
Great. Howie, do you have anything to add to this?
Well, I had an experience with one of my e-books where I ended up getting like 18 bids, and I couldn't bring myself to hire any of them. Just, you know, the letters they were writing me to tell me how good they were, it was like, you know, they learned English in the 19th century.
Well, you realize a lot of the Elance bidders are from India, and their English is from the 19th century. So, anyway, yeah, so what did you do?
I ended up canceling the project and writing it myself, which was a real pain.
Mm-hmm.
I heard about another service. It's escaping me at the moment. With like something like Moonlighters. Does anyone know about that one?
I don't know that one.
E-lighters.
Something Moonlight. I can find it out. I haven't tried them yet. They're supposed to be sort of a cut above Elance. Yeah, if you can split test, and not necessarily with the whole project, but with, you know, a chapter, do a $100 split test. It can save you the misery of getting a book back that you don't feel like putting your name on.
So, like, hire them to write one chapter. Hire a couple of guys to write one chapter.
Yeah, put out a bid and then to choose the top two.
That's a great idea.
Everything's split testing in our business.
Yeah. Okay, I think that covered that pretty well. Next question in that list?
So someone writes about the homepage. Does it make a big difference in conversions if the top is the beginning of the letter or has some sort of graphic?
Well, one thing, I want to answer that one. For some reason, people got into the habit of putting up banner graphics, header graphics, whatever you call them, on the top of sales letters. And people that have actually bothered to test that have found that it generally reduces response. And why is that? Well, that goes way back to Claude Hopkins. You can read his explanation from 1922. Basically, when you're selling, you don't want to appear to be, you know, a salesman. You want to appear to be a helpful person who's giving information and showing people their options. So if you, like, that's another reason not to invest tons and tons of money into designing the world's most beautiful website. It immediately puts people on guard. They think, what are they trying to sell me? These guys look awfully slick. Also, it distances you from your prospect. You know, instead of being you just talking to somebody, now all of a sudden you're this sort of nebulous corporate entity that's, you know, kind of there but not there, you know. So make your letter look like a letter. If you look at the web pages for the system, I mean, they're garish, but they look like some human being actually made them. They don't look like some slick machine produced them. And this is an old direct mail thing, and it's something you have to experience firsthand to really believe it. But rough sells better than polished, and garish sells better than pastel colors. Why? And again, it's because it seems real. It seems like it's coming from a real person. Right, let's go to the next one.
Well, someone wants to know, what's a good overall time commitment to set up for a person new to Internet marketing? And a related question is, what's a good overall budget to set up?
The time commitment thing seems kind of theoretical, overly theoretical to me, not to just diminish anybody's question. If you're interested in something, I mean, it's sort of a logical question, but it seems to me it's a question of somebody that's not really sure they want to do it. Like, if I wanted to learn tennis or something, or I wanted to learn how to sail, I would probably say, God, I really want to learn how to sail, and whatever it takes, I'm going to do it. And then I would just get out there and start doing it, and eventually I'd become good at it. I don't know how many fields there are that have quantified how many hours it takes, or weeks, or days, or months to learn it. I'm a little leery of that question.
I have a take on where the question comes from.
Okay.
In so much of the internet marketing world, a lot of things are being sold on hype.
This is so easy.
It won't take any time. Anyone can do it. And from my experience in talking to the real players, there is a cost of admission to the players club, and it's two things. It's your creativity, being more creative, and not just taking someone's template and following it blindly.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it were that simple, everyone would be doing it, and there'd be no money in it. And the second thing is time. You know, these guys who talk about being lazy, it's a little tongue-in-cheek, because the people who claim to be the laziest, I know, are doing far more research
than
anybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to confess that there was a little bit too much talk at the last training about how easy and how lazy you can be than I normally like to see at a system training, and we're going to tighten that up. We're going to tighten that up. It's easier than digging coal. It's easier than picking cotton. There's no question about that, and it's a lot more remunerative. But the idea that you don't have to do anything, I think everybody on this call is sensible enough to know that's hyperbole. There's work involved. But I want to address something that Howie said about creativity. To me, some people think they're creative, some people think they're not creative. To me, it's more involvement. In other words, if you just want to passively do something and not really invest yourself in it, I don't think anything's going to work, to be frank. And on the other hand, that's the bad news. The good news is if you involve yourself in something, the talent will grow in you and the creativity will happen spontaneously if you're involved. That's why I'm a little leery of a question, well, how long does it take? And because that seems to me somebody who's already putting the brakes on. They're not interested enough, really, to just say, okay, what do I have to do? You know, where do I go? What's the first, how long will it take? That, you know what I mean?
No, I kind of looked at it a little differently, Ken.
Okay, that's fine.
And I agree that I wouldn't be able to come up with any specific time commitment, mm-hmm. but I think anybody who's serious about marketing on the Internet successfully needs to have a consistent time commitment.
Ah, good.
And so maybe it's 1 hour a day that you're able to devote, or 2 or 3 hours, but whatever that is, you need to be consistent about it. And if you can designate a specific time every day, so you know this is my Internet marketing time, just do it. And an hour or two of consistent work will definitely show progress over time.
Brilliant. That's really a great answer. And the key word there, consistent. And I think if that also ties in well to this idea of involvement. If you're involved in something, if you care about something, you're going to want to do it every day. But we all need help in organizing ourselves. So Cindy's suggestion of setting a time every day to do an hour is a lot of time. An hour of focused effort is a lot of time. I mean, to give you some comparison, when I started in all this, before there was the Internet, before there was Jay Abraham and Gary Halbert and Dan Kennedy and all these people that made it easy, I just read every book I could get on mail order and direct marketing for a year. That's all I did. I read every one, though, and I read several of them many times. And I didn't even have anybody I could talk to anywhere about how this stuff actually worked in practice. I mean, zero, nobody. No seminars, no teleseminars, no e-books. I mean, zero. They were just the books in the library and the books you could get from the Direct Marketing Association. So after a year of reading, I had a pretty good grasp of the foundations. Then I tried to do little projects, and they were little. My first mail order project asked people for $1. And I'm looking at the first $1 I got. It's still on my wall. So that's a very slow motion approach because it was all that was available. So, I guess that's the direction I'm coming at. And of course my girlfriend at the time was like, well, what are you reading all these books for? You know, where's this going to lead? And I was just so fascinated and so interested and so involved. I wasn't looking at the clock. I wasn't looking at how much time it took. I was just doing it. And by the way, consistently, I was just doing it every day. That was what I was into. And I think whatever the field, whether it's brain surgery or doing direct marketing or raising cattle or whatever it's going to be, you need to have some feeling for it that will get you involved in a real way and doing things on a consistent basis. The second question was how much money. It's hard. I mean, so much of this stuff can be done just with money that you would normally, pardon the French, piss away. I mean, running a website isn't much. Traffic, initially when you're just testing stuff isn't much. To me, especially anything involved in marketing has 99% to do with thinking and 1% to do with money. You know, this just gives you another example from my real life. This whole system training, I invested nothing financially into getting it started. It was all joint ventures with people. And you can do the same thing on the internet. I mean, if you had, I'll give you an example of a friend who really started with his back to the wall, had absolutely no money, was too ill to work, was out there. And what he did was this list building thing that I was talking about a while ago. He created a little newsletter on a particular topic. And he went out and posted articles and discussion boards and submitted articles to e-zines and drove people to. He didn't even have a website. I forgot that part about it. He couldn't even afford a website. And he was knowledgeable. It wasn't like he didn't know what he was doing. He was an electrical engineer, but he didn't even have enough money to put up a simple page. So he set up an autoresponder. And so people, instead of going to a website to get their free newsletter, they would go to his autoresponder, and that would put them in the sequence. And then what he would do, because he had no money and a lot of time, is when somebody wrote to the autoresponder, he'd not only have the autoresponder respond to them, he'd respond back to them. He'd write them personally, some of them, and actually got into dialogues via email to find out who these people were and what they wanted and how he could serve them. And he started getting involved in affiliate stuff. In fact, I don't think he's ever created his own product in all these years. He's just done affiliate marketing. And he's done very well. And he started with you couldn't be lower than this guy. I mean, financially and health wise. I mean, his back was to the wall under every imaginable standard. So that's my answer to the money thing. You can certainly spend tens of thousands of dollars on this, but I don't recommend it.
I have a couple of quick answers to both of those questions.
Okay.
I think Cindy's point about an hour a day is really important. And what I found, it's like gardening. You know, you go out, you don't know what you're doing. You buy a big book and you throw down some seed. There's all this stuff you can do in the book, hundreds of things you could be doing. But in the end, as you get good at it, you realize there's only really three things you need to do every day or every week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need to water, you need to check the nitrogen content, and you need to weed. And everything else could make it better and better, but you don't have time for it. It's kind of 80-20. I've discovered just from messing around that these are the thing, working on Google is the thing that gives me the biggest ROI.
Mm-hmm.
Working on my web page, making little changes and testing them is the second thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of things that could make me more money, but I don't focus on all of them. I focus on just a couple that I find the most important.
Excellent. That's a really good point.
In terms of the budget, if we take the Frank model, I spend $8 for a domain name.
Mm-hmm.
If I think it's going to be a reasonable, you don't need to be hosting the domain if you just want to do like a few days on Google, because
mm-hmm.
AdWords is not going to catch up with you.
Mm-hmm.
But if they send someone to your site and see that it's not the URL that you put as a display, they'll shut you down. So, at that point, you can then say, well, do I know enough? I spend $4 a month. I use GoDaddy, junior web hosting.
Mm-hmm.
It's $4 a month. I will spend anywhere from $50 to $100 on Google traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have all the tools that I would be using anyway. I think it's hard to do this business without a shopping cart of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard.
But let me just interrupt. I'm sorry to interrupt, but for the purpose of a beginner getting familiar with the tools, your initial focus could be just on building a mailing list and dealing with affiliate offers, making offers on behalf of other people, and not even worrying about taking orders or having a product. I just want to throw that out there. Action is better than inaction.
If you want to do it in its purest form and just do – I know a guy who makes $88 a day – selling in profit just on affiliate ads on Google, which means no website, no autoresponder. He just does better Google marketing than the companies that he's selling for, and he makes $88 a day in profit. He doesn't even need to own a computer. He needs to go down to the library and buy Google AdWords.
So let's Let's talk about that model, because that's kind of interesting. Can we be more specific, not about what he's selling, but the mechanism? What he's working for affiliates, right?
Right. So he looks for affiliate sites that have decent profit margins and pretty high ticket items.
Oh, I
So a sale would be worth $50 to him.
Okay. So in other words, there are companies out there, and we're getting late in the day, so I'm just going to be blunt. They're too dumb to buy their own Google AdWords. And they've left this opportunity for people that understand Google AdWords well to just buy the traffic, act as an affiliate, and make money.
Yep, and they're not even that dumb. They're just not as smart as Perry Marshall.
Okay, fair enough.
It's not like you have to go to a company and say, oh, God, they have to be so stupid. If you take what you learn at a system training and you buy a couple of Perry's courses and some other stuff and you look at it and you just do misspellings, or some negative keywords, you only have to do a teeny bit better. It's not like you have to kick butt with these big companies. You only have to do a teeny bit better, have a little better headline.
That's true. And the thing I want to repeat is, if you're a beginner and this stuff seems, really out there, please realize that 99% of all the professional internet marketers out there, who have got drawing salaries working for companies, don't even know half the stuff that we're talking about on this beginner's call. And I can tell you that having met and dealt with them over the last 11 years, this stuff that we're dealing with is really, really advanced. So, if you can do it, when you learn and just start doing this stuff, all kinds of opportunities will present themselves. So, good. I think we answered that question pretty well. Do we have any other questions in that list?
The last one we have, someone wants to know, for what's a good web design application? Is there a favorite for the Mac or for PC? So I guess that's for people who want to do it themselves or have control over their own websites.
Yeah. I don't know. We write all our code by hand here. We always have. And I think there's a lot of advantages to it. But I don't know what I hear about FrontPage and Dreamweaver and all that kind of stuff. I don't know that we're the people to answer on how to become a web page developer. I don't know. Anybody have a suggestion for the?
Well, I know from people I know who do their own web pages.
Yeah.
And I've done them myself some. Dreamweaver and FrontPage seem to be the two that are used the most often.
Okay.
Now, whether that makes them the best, I don't know.
Yeah, I think ultimately, in my opinion, you want to get away from I don't know what they call these things, page generation tools or whatever. It's a fine place to start, and there's no problem with that. But I prefer hand coding myself because the code's just simpler. It's easier to change. It's easier to update. It's easier to maintain. And so, if you work with a web designer, make sure they have some ability to do some hand coding, because a lot of people will say, oh, yeah, I'm a web designer. Yeah, give me $100 an hour. And all they're doing is going to one of these simple page generation programs that you could be doing yourself, or you could be paying a kid to do it for $10 an hour. Try to get somebody with a little bit of sophistication who know what to do when the machine-generated code breaks down and how to go in and fix it. I mean, it's kind of, we're kind of getting off into a really technical thing that you may never have to worry about. But, yeah, I hear Dreamweaver is great. I hear, forget the other one that we mentioned is fine. But the best thing, in my opinion, find somebody that's good at it, loves it, that you can develop a working relationship with and have them handle all your page creation for you. Because it's low-paid work. It's your time researching and perfecting your marketing ideas pays exponentially more money than messing around with building web pages. Great. Do we have another one, Howie?
Those are all the beginner questions.
Okay, great.
Ken, there was one more.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I can just give an example. It's the person who was asking about the upsell and how do they move people from a page to a page.
Right, right.
And on WebAdMagic, when we instituted the resell rights,
yep.
We basically have exactly what he's talking about or she's talking about, where we have the product and then we have two upsells that go with it. So if they want to look at an example, they click on the buy link on WebAdMagic, they'll see the way that we set ours up.
Great. So the person that asked about how to handle upsells, and for a beginner, I wouldn't even think about upsells right now. I'd think about getting people to look at your page. There's really how I give this great example of gardening. I mean, what do? You water the plants, you make sure they have fertilizer, and you weed them. I mean, that's pretty much it. And in this business, you research markets, you work on your lead generation, you know, how to get more people to come to your site, and then you work on your conversion. What do to sell them when they get there? And that's really the whole business. By the way, if you want to see another interesting upsell model, cross-sell model, buy a domain name from GoDaddy.com, which is where I get my domain names. I kind of like them, GoDaddy.com. And between the time you order your domain name and actually click the confirmation button, they must show you, I don't know, what is it, 50, 100 separate offers, and they're doing that for a reason. Well, great. You know, we started out with the intention of doing an hour, maybe stretching it to an hour and a half, and we're coming up on 2.5 hours. So I think we've covered some good groundwork here, and we're going to get this, Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. We're going to get this digital version of this online so everybody can listen to it and review it. And future calls, which we will have at the rate of at least once a month, will be more focused on answering your specific questions. But I think it was good that we made an attempt to cover a wide area on this first call. Howie or Cindy, do you have anything you'd like to leave us with? Any words of wisdom or words of encouragement, words of direction, words of insight? How's that for pressure?
Well, I would just say to folks that there's really nothing you can't do if you put your mind to it. And I'd speak for myself, but probably Howie too and Ken at one point a long time ago, we all started out not knowing anything about Internet marketing. And at various paces and speeds, we've all moved along to fairly good levels where we're making good money out there and we have good products that we're offering to folks. And it's possible to do. You just need to be consistent and you need to focus on what you're doing and get it done. Just get it done. That's all I can say.
Great.
Yeah,
great. Howie?
I would say the best way to learn this stuff is to find people who know less than you and teach them.
Interesting.
Show, you know, don't start, you know, doing knockoff seminars.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's, you know, you got a brother-in-law or a friend or you know, you see someone who has great content and you'd like to just help them. You know, if you know someone who has a consulting practice and you know they've got a great book or ebook inside them, help them go through it. And you'll, you know, that's how I feel more confident. I find people who, you know less than me and I can be the king of the hill. And that gives me kind of the swagger to go in and show them these sites, and as I show them, I get better at it.
You know, that's actually how I became a marketing consultant. Ironically, I didn't realize that I could be a marketing consultant, even though I'd been selling things successfully for, I think, 15 years before I realized that, gee, maybe I knew how to do this. I always thought marketing was something. Remember, I'm pre Dan Kennedy, pre-Gary Halbert, pre-internet, I mean, pre all this stuff. And so I always thought marketing was a department in a corporation and you had to have a license or something to do it, you know? I mean, that's how primitive my conception of all this was when I got started. And yet here I was promoting concerts and selling out concert halls and, you know, I mean, a really good marketer. I just never thought to call myself one. And so when I decided that maybe I could actually make money helping other people market, I was very shy about it. So the way I started was I just helped my friends for free, just like Howie said. I'd see them trying to do something, and I'd say, well, why don't you try this? And, you know, why don't you try that? And by golly, a lot of this stuff worked really well. And bit by bit, I developed confidence, and I realized, you know, I'm pretty good at this. And so that's definitely a way. Maybe you're a member of a club or an organization or a church or I had a friend, you know, who was in a really bad accident. His wife needed to raise a lot of money, and we used marketing to conceive of this auction and then promote the auction, and that helped her raise some money. There's a million and one causes and people out there that need to get their word out, and that would be, no one else is going to help them, so maybe that would be another way you could start, you know, developing your marketing chops by applying some of the things you learn to real-life situations. These are, you know, these are phenomenally versatile and endlessly useful tools that you're learning here. I mean, there is no limit. I mean, obviously, you know, people are focusing on money, and that's important. And that's the honey that attracts folks. But, I mean, there's all other ways to use this stuff to improve your community, improve your neighborhood, improve the membership organizations that you belong to. These are very versatile tools, very, very worth learning. And I guarantee this, the effort you make to learn how to be a better marketer, you will absolutely never regret the investment of time and energy to do that, because, again, the versatility and the endlessly useful ways you can use this, it just never ends. So on that note, if you all don't mind, I think we'll call it a day. And Howie and Cindy, thank you so much for being willing to step up and help out. I do want to repeat that Howie's created a very solid and comprehensive course on sales and marketing if you don't have that experience. And Cindy's created a very good course on the mechanics, the essential mechanics of Internet marketing. Both of those courses you can read more about at thesystemseminar.com/smart-beginners. If you're ready to put up a website, you got the copy, you got the market, you know exactly what you're doing, but you just can't get the website up, send me an email, kenmc@amacord.com, and I will forward your information on to System Grad Tom Costner, who's a very experienced computer guy. And he's creating, in the process of creating a turnkey service for people that want to get websites up fast. And I think that's something worth checking out. He's going to be offering it to a couple of guinea pigs at a very low price. And again, if you're hearing this on tape, probably no point in writing me about it, because the 5 seats that he's got to do the test will probably be gone by then. But thanks for tuning in. I hope you found this useful. Certainly enjoyable for me to do it, and I bet Howie and Cindy enjoyed doing it too.
Absolutely.
Yep, thank you very much.
I want to congratulate Cindy on Nathaniel, who is proof that no one is born knowing anything. You're just born, and there you are, and then you have to learn stuff.
That's true.
And right? I mean, that's how it is. And Nathaniel was born when we were having our info marketing seminar. Right, more or less?
That's correct.
Yeah, otherwise you would have been there.
That's right.
We missed you. But it was a good cause. It was a good cause. And great. Well, thanks, everybody. And I'm going to say goodbye. And we'll send you an email next time we do one of these, which will be at least one next month.
Right.
Okay. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.